one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, the Phillies are absolutely red hot. Major League Baseball's best team in the month of August, coming off yet another three-game sweep, this time of the Angels out in L.A. And we're going to break down what happened over the course of the weekend. Lots of heroes to go around. Kind of some frustrating games out west, but the Phillies managed to pull them out. And a nice pitching performance really across the board in this three-game series. So lots to get to. And as we're talking right now, the Phillies are in Arizona taking on the Diamondbacks in a series that has really big playoff implications, especially for the wild card. As we speak, Bryson Stott demolished a home run to right field in the second inning that went something like 765 feet. It was a tank shot, and so we'll be keeping an eye on that game as we roll along. But joining me here on this edition of the Roundtable, I have got Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus. Justin also hosts a couple of our podcasts over at the Hit and Season Patreon, Absolutely Hammered and The Dirty. He's also author of the book Summer of the Cheap Wieners, and he's going to help break us all down. Justin, how you feeling, buddy?
I always look forward to West Coast baseball, staying up late, and then by the end of that last stretch of the season, you're just like, oh, man. I think we recorded a new Absolutely Hammered over at the Hit and Season Patreon. I know we planned to do it, but... Who knows? At this point, it's all blur. It's all a very late night blur. And I'm just grateful that the Mariners series wasn't indicative of how this entire road trip was going to go, because staying up this late for regular season baseball is already pretty taxing. When the Phillies don't even win, well, then you just feel foolish waking up the next morning. So I've been grateful in this Angels series, among other things, that they got very much back on track and made you feel good about staying up to watch.
Yeah, Phillies West Coast games are a recipe for regret. I mean, it just is like you, because you're staying up way later than you should. You know, you're not getting the sleep that you need. At least you want to be rewarded for that sacrifice. And when you're not, when they lose, especially if they lose in heartbreaking fashion, which we haven't really seen on this road trip at all, obviously, you really do feel like you've made a terrible life decision. But the Phillies, first in Seattle, they got off to a little bit of a rough start on this West Coast road trip. But then the Angels came in, one of the worst teams in baseball, and it was the elixir the Phillies have needed. And so they enter Arizona with a 20-7 record here in the month of August, as they are playing on the final day of August. The Phillies have won 13 of their last 15. Remember, they rolled into Seattle with a 9-game winning streak, lost 2, and now have won 4 in a row. They entered the series against Arizona, tied with the Chicago Cubs for the top wild card spot. That has been a climb. They were way behind the Cubs at the start of this winning streak, and now the Cubs haven't been playing terrible baseball, but the Phillies have caught them in the wild card race. The Cubs have a tiebreaker, but we don't really care about that yet. It's amazing they have the same record as Chicago. Chicago is spanking Milwaukee as we record right now, so the Phillies will need to win probably to keep pace. But the Braves lost on Monday night to the San Francisco Giants, so a win against the Diamondbacks moves them to within 4 games of the National League. Regardless, this is the first month the Phillies have had 4 sweeps of 3 or more games in 35 years, going back to 1991. And that was in a span of 6 series. The Good Fight stats guru Schmeckman noted that the last time the Phillies had 4 sweeps of 3 or more in a span of 5 series, like they just did, was 49 years ago in August of 1977. What is it about August? Something about August. This team gets hot in August. And the only other time they... Go ahead.
No, I just wrote about August playing baseball in August for the Baseball Prospectus today. A story about how August is just the most disgusting and awful month to play baseball in it. All of it culminating in the story of a broadcaster having an insect fly down his throat while he is trying to broadcast a game in the month of August. It's just a rough month to play. But not for the Phillies. And that's one of the points I bring up, is that you got to wonder about a team that thrives in August when everything's just kind of like wet and gross and dead. But here the Phillies are defying all of that. And hey, I'll take it.
They're like a mold spore. They blossom in these conditions. You know, it's just, I don't know that's the comparison they really want, but I mean.
What is a mold spore if not life finding a way, John?
Fine, that's right.
It's
that's
persevering.
That's right.
In the
that's
walls
right.
of your house, you know, like that's, that I think it's, that's inspiring.
Listen.
They would say that's inspiring.
Mold is hard to kill. Right. Mm-hmm. You gotta like, it's expensive to get rid of it. You know, you got to bring in a whole team. They got to wear
tough
suits.
Opponent.
I mean, it's a, yeah. they're a tough opponent. They're a gritty opponent. You know,
mold
that's what mold
out.
Is. It is.
Yeah.
Mold is a
lot
tough.
A lot of people will tell you that.
Yeah, it is. And so that's I think an apt comparison to your Philadelphia Phillies right now. As we look back on this Angels series, the mold came to the forefront, out in Anaheim. Let's talk. I'm sorry, guys. We'll move backwards through the series because obviously the most fascinating game was on Friday night. So, of course, let's save that for last. We'll work backwards and we'll talk about the game on Sunday. You had Zach Wheeler with a nice bounce back performance from him. He still doesn't look exactly right. Was struggling at times with this Angels lineup, especially in the first inning. And really in the last inning, looked like he was about ready to give away the store. But at the end of the day, you got six innings from Zach Wheeler for one of his best starts in quite a while. Four hits, one run allowed. He did walk three batters, struck out six. It was the first time he'd finished six innings in a start since July 21st. And maybe the most encouraging moment of this game, Justin, was his last out in that sixth inning. They were really trying to get him through that inning. I think they wanted to see what he was going to do in that situation, because we've seen it in some of his previous starts that he's kind of leaked oil when you could tell like he was running out of gas. And it looked like he was doing that again in the sixth inning in this game. But he managed it with runners on first and second, two guys that he walked with two outs. He managed to strike out of Jose Siri to get out of that inning. Game was still tied 1-1. And that to me was the key moment, because in the next inning you have Mundo Sosa rewarding Zach Wheeler with another huge home run. We'll get to the other home run he hit in this series in just a couple of minutes, but hits the go-ahead home run in the very next half inning, and the Phillies just added on from there in the later innings. But I'm still not ready to say like Zach Wheeler looks great, but it was certainly an improvement, albeit against an offense that's not terrific in the Angels. But a good outing from Zach Wheeler, nonetheless, I think helping everybody to exhale just a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, everybody would have gotten a lot from a totally dominant Zach Wheeler shutout performance. But I think that one worked for the time being. You know, that felt like getting back on track Zach Wheeler start, which is kind of funny because there's two starts in this series that featured pitchers who were going to be scrutinized. Andrew Painter because of how well he's been pitching, and Zach Wheeler because of how much he's been struggling lately. And both of those games started with what looked like, oh, this is a disaster. Okay,
yeah.
This is going to be a huge disaster. Wheeler started that game allowing a walk, hitting a batter, and then a hit. He had a bases loaded, no out situation. It looked like things were going to get very messy very quickly, and the, you know, Zach Wheeler bounce back game that you were kind of hoping for against a team like the Angels just wasn't going to happen. And every time it's a lousier and lousier opponent that's able to do that to him, you think, okay, just how far are we going to sink here? But fortunately, he gets that double play in the first inning, and then gets the strikeout he needs to get out of it. And then from there on, he's pretty, you know, calm, cool, and collected. Winds up allowing four hits, just the one earned run, three walks, one in the first inning and then two in his last inning. So like those middle couple of innings, the issues with command and control and everything, you know, still not totally eliminated from his game. Still, breaking stuff was working a little better and command looked a little better. He's obviously been having a bad time. But looking at that stat column where he kind of limited his walks between the first and last inning of his performance, that's exactly what you want to see. And then, yeah, it comes down to that big strikeout of Jose Siri in the sixth. That was so clutch. But both Wheeler and Painter and Sanchez in game two really also got to benefit from, honestly, you know, they made a bunch of mistakes this weekend, but defensively there were some huge, huge highlight reel plays. Bryson Stott made two different plays at third base that were just excellent defensive stops. And Derek Hill in game three.
Oh, man.
Amazing Superman diving catch in center that really saved Wheeler's bacon in that particular moment, too. So, yeah, generally encouraged by what I saw from Wheeler. Obviously, like you said, not all the way back, but encouraged by what you saw and pleased that he was able to lean on his defense a couple of times and that the offense was able to, you know, cough up a couple of runs for him.
I said ahead of the series that I think there were three big tests that the Phillies had against a bad team in the Angels. But I think there were three things going into this series that I was really interested in seeing how it was going to shake out. One of them, of course, was Zach Wheeler, because he had had so many starts as of late where he was not at all good and just didn't look like himself. And I wasn't. Because he says he's not injured, the team doesn't think he's injured, because the fastball velocity is still there, it's clearly something mechanical going on with him. And they said they were looking into his biomechanics and reading a couple of articles about it. They thought maybe he was leaning too far forward, and that was throwing some things off when he was at his set position, and all different kinds of things that that they can look at and see. You know, this could be throwing some things off. So it was clear that, to me, there's something mechanical going on. That's why his command was all over the place. And so I feel good about Zach Wheeler figuring that out. But you just, you know, when's that going to happen? How long is it going to take? Is it going to get fixed before the playoffs roll around? I don't know that we can say that it's fixed, but I thought that was one of the big tests that was facing the Phillies was, can Zach Wheeler get back on track? I think at the very least, we can say that for this start, yes, I think if the train had come off the tracks a little bit, derailed a little bit, I think they've at least gotten the train back on the tracks. Now they're going to try and work on getting it moving, getting it moving in the right direction again, and hopefully getting it back up to speed to the point it was before. But it was an encouraging performance from him on Saturday. On Sunday. And Edmundo, so well, yeah, go ahead.
Trouble is a big deal, but like to your point. That first inning, you know, ball bounces another way. We're talking about a first inning meltdown. We're talking about three or four runs coming in. So, like, you know, he did wind up in that situation. And then, like we said, in the sixth, got into a bit of trouble again. But, yeah, last six, seven starts from Zach Wheeler, he doesn't necessarily get those strikeouts that ended both innings. So you did see something. And like I said, the command was definitely improved from his last couple disasters. So I think everybody can feel good about that one and just, you know, wait and hope to see more improvements the next time out.
We do have to talk a little bit about Edmundo Sosa. In his last five games, Edmundo Sosa is 8-for-19 with 3 doubles and 10 RBIs. It has been a struggle for him this year, Justin, but every now and then, it seems that there's a point in every season where Edmundo Sosa just gets unbelievably, ridiculously hot. And I'm not kidding you when I say he carries the team at stretches. Like, I mean, it's just where... I hope they re-sign him this offseason. I don't know where they'd be without him. He is just the best utility infielder in baseball because he can do some of the stuff he did in this series, and especially on Sunday.
Yeah, I gotta say, the Edmundo Sosa hot streak, I've actually brought up a couple of times, is specifically something we've been missing this year, and that he hasn't had much of a presence. There hasn't been that, like, that news cycle where Edmundo Sosa just dominated and was the Phillies offense. You just did not get that. He had 158 in 12 games in July. Like, it was not his best month ever. And he had a pretty lousy May too. You can say that quite easily he has not been on fire in the way that we know he can catch fire. And I don't think he usually waits this late into the season to have it. I feel like usually that's a first half phenomenon, is watching Edmundo Sosa go off. Somebody's like hurt or whatever, and he's just getting more playing time. And he goes nuts, and then he gets overexposed, and he cools off, and it's back to earth. In August, he's hitting 423 in 10 games. So I think it's here. I think the Edmundo Sosa...
Oh, yeah, it's here.
And you're just living in the middle of it now. And now you get to just reap the benefits, because when he hit that home run, you know, I've said before, you can't always be as sure when Sosa reacts after a home run that he nailed it, even if he thinks he did, because he is one of the ones that is, you know, not always 100% right about that. But boy, he looked pretty sure of himself when he made that contact to give the Phillies the lead in Game 3 against the Angels. And boy, that one went a long way. And yeah, when you're getting Edmundo Sosa like this, all you got to do is let him do that, and he'll take care of the rest. So yeah, that's an important part of how this offense works. And seeing it this late in the season is you know, gratifying, I think is the
word. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, it's great to get contributions from someone else. I mean, that's what good teams do. They get contributions from up and down the lineup, up and down the roster, everybody participating. I mean, we've seen Brian De La Cruz have big moments. We've certainly seen guys like Derek Hill have big moments. And this series was Edmundo Sosa's turn to do that. And nice work by the Phillies bullpen. Really, throughout this series, the bullpen maybe starting to come together a little bit. I mean, Kirkering is still a little shaky. Alvarado's still a little shaky. But I think what you see in Alex McFarland, who's come in a couple of these games, and looked utterly dominant. And none of us could understand why he was in the minors for so long this year. His stuff is the best outside of Duran. It's the best in the bullpen. And Jonathan Bolin had some big moments in this series as well, especially the game on Friday when Joan Duran was unavailable because of a stomach virus. He had a couple of big moments. So in the game on Sunday, to kind of close it out, as the Phillies added a few runs, the bullpen did a good job shutting it down as well.
Yeah, the Phillies bullpen allowed 3 walks in 9 innings over this series. The Angels bullpen allowed 8 walks in 10 innings. And over the weekend had an ERA over 8. So you also just got to see an example of like, all right, like, look, this is what a truly awful bullpen looks like. And don't get me wrong, I've definitely felt that way about the Phillies bullpen so far this year. But you're just like, okay, at least this isn't a bullpen that gets down there and stays down there. Like you said, this was nice to see that they were able to throw up some zeros and kind of connect from the starter to Duran a couple of times. Like that's just, you know, like Wheeler, it's good to see. I'm not sure I'm going to trust it yet, but good to see from what has definitely been a vulnerability of this team for the past few weeks, if not months.
As someone who has seen quite a bit of Nationals baseball this year, living in the Washington DC area, let me tell you, I know what a bad bullpen looks like. The Phillies bullpen has struggled at times. There's a difference between Anaheim's bullpen, Washington's bullpen, and the Phillies bullpen. But it's not a difference. And you know, in the playoffs, you want a little bit better. But, you know, I think Alex McFarland is going to be quite an addition to this bullpen down the stretch, and that's just when they needed him the most. Let's turn to the game on Saturday night. The Phillies won 4-2 in 10 innings. This was the really sloppy affair. The Phillies ran into a bunch of outs on the bases. There was one instance where you had Trey Turner thrown out at third, and then Bryce Harper tried a straight steal of home in the same inning. And that was
it.
Had it. Yep. It was close. It would have been an exceedingly cool moment if he'd managed to pull it off. And then you had Brandon Marsh in the 10th inning. Even though the Phillies ended up scoring 3 runs in that inning, he was thrown out at third on a ground ball hit to the shortstop. So I don't know that the outs on the bases in the 8th inning were necessarily due to stupidity. The one in the 10th, Brandon Marsh is in the 10th, certainly was. And yet, the Phillies end up winning this thing 4-2. Thankfully, they were pitching. They were playing against the Anaheim Angels. Phillies had a 1-0 lead heading into the 8th. Bolin gave up a solo homer to Nieto. I think it was a 12-pitch at bat. It was a tremendous at bat. Hats off to the hitter in that case. I mean, just a tremendous piece of hitting there. But the big story on Saturday, Justin, was Chris Sanchez. Notched his 200th strikeout of the season. He went 7 innings, gave up 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts, just 91 pitches, 65 for strikes, 16 swings and misses. He now has 202 strikeouts on the season. He's just the 12th pitcher in Phillies history to reach 200 strikeouts multiple times. And in August now, Christopher Sanchez's ERA is 1.72 with a 1.15 whip. So I think there was a little bit of concern after kind of a bumpy and rocky July that, you know, something might have been a little bit off with Christopher Sanchez. He has, I think, quieted those fears with a tremendous month of August. He's probably not pitcher of the month, but he's maybe in the consideration. Just a great month for him.
Another encouraging development for Sanchez. Yeah, one area of concern, even with his performance, was that it really started to seem like runners might have something on Christopher Sanchez, the way the Angels were kind of feasting on him once they got on base. That was definitely something that was frustrating him and distracting for him, I think, earlier in the games. But like you said, he worked around some damage, you know, allowing leadoff hitters on. But like, really, when he struck out that 200th batter, he'd actually struck out 198, 199, and 200 all in the same inning after letting a leadoff batter on. So it was great to see his pitch count like stay low for a lot of the beginning of that as well. So he was working efficiently, and he hadn't pitched in the seventh inning since before the All-Star break. So wow. Again, just encouraging developments to see from starting pitchers who are really the pillar you lean on the most for this team's success. You know, offense comes and goes, bullpen comes and goes, and even the rotation, we've seen the big pieces struggle recently. But you really need those three pitchers looking like they can compete so you can contend. That's really what this all comes down to. So another great start, a promising start to see from somebody like Christopher Sanchez, for sure.
I think Jesus Luzardo may have had just a slightly better month than Christopher Sanchez here in the month of August. But as you're looking at these two pitchers, it's pretty clear the Phillies have guys. These are two aces with the way that they're pitching. And you hope Zach Wheeler kind of gets back to that. He was looking like that earlier in the season, mm-hmm. and the stuff is still there. So it's entirely possible he comes around. Who are you starting in game one of a playoff series right now? Would you? Oh, you're what? Come on.
We're doing this every week. I know. It's just now it just depends on which of these starters is currently.
Did I ask this before? Did I ask this last week?
We've done this a couple of times. And that's
all right. Well, we don't have to do it again.
It keeps changing. And the answer right now, I think, is still Luzardo. If we're saying, like, if the question is really who is the most reliable Phillies starting pitcher right now, then the answer, I think, right now is Luzardo. We just spent like half an hour talking about how the last two starts from the other two guys were promising re-beginnings to hopefully the next hot streak they're about to go on. But like you said, it was an up and down July for Sanchez, and Wheeler's had some truly bad starts in his last five or six or seven starts. So I think, yeah, Luzardo gets that ball because he's the one that has really been holding the line this whole time.
I was going to go Christopher Sanchez. I think Christopher Sanchez is the game one starter. I think he is the established ace. I think he's having he had kind of a rocky month there, but I mean, Luzardo had a rocky month earlier in the season. It just is a different time he had it. So,
there to be no definitive answer. That's the point. You want them to be like valid game one starters. It just depends on, how's it going right now? And we're coming out of a rough patch at the moment for two out of three of those guys, at least. But like you said, Luzardo hasn't been without his ups and downs this year, too. It's just right now, if you said, like, we need a stopper, I would be like, all right, well, Lizardo's not in, like, a tinkering phase. He's not, like, in a, okay, I got to figure out what I'm doing wrong phase. He's like, no, I just got to keep doing what I'm doing. Whereas the other two guys feel like they're still trying to, get back in the groove.
Yeah, that's fair. I get it. And like you said, I promise I will put a moratorium on this question until we get closer to October. We'll just let it play out. And I think that's the thing with this Phillies team. We're going to talk about the Friday night game here coming up in just a second. But I think that's the thing with this Phillies team is like, historically with this group, I've wanted to kind of see, look at, what are we watching right now and what can we project into October? And yeah. The thing that I just keep coming back to, because last year when they got hot in August and stayed hot in September, I felt so good about them going into the postseason with the way that they were playing. And then, we all know what happened in the Dodgers series. I just can't do that anymore. I can't project anything anymore. Like, I'm just trying to live in the moment and enjoy the moment. But I do think about things like, if I'm Don Mattingly and I got to pick a game one starter, who am I picking? It's a good problem to have. I've got two great starters. Who do I choose from? And maybe that's why I do it. Maybe it's my way of just reminding myself this team has some good problems, right? Like, this is the kind of decision you want your manager to have to wrestle with. Which one of my two amazing Cy Young caliber pitchers do I start in game one of a playoff series? So I know this. We all are looking at everything that we see with and thinking about it in terms of October, but I just don't. You can't draw any conclusions, some grand conclusions about this team with anything really. Here at the end of August, you just want them to keep winning. That's it.
I mean, unfortunately, yeah, that's just the nature of the playoffs. I think everybody's going to be going in thinking like, what is definitely going to happen? And I don't have to tell you that, like, there's no answer to that going into the playoffs. There's no answer that you could have, like, did all three of these guys get back on track and have the best, the best three starters, the best one through three in the history of September in Major League Baseball. And then, like, Wheeler comes out to pitch the first game of the playoffs and, he burps while he's delivering the first pitch and it goes somewhere he didn't mean for it and it lands in the seats and suddenly all that's over. You've seen this team go into the postseason a million different ways. All the different variations have been attempted to learn what was the advantage.
Yeah, and that's exactly right.
All the X factors that came raining down changed the narrative. And, you know, at this point, you're just like, yeah, get in and win games. We got to keep it simple here. You know, if they have a bye week, we'll be talking about who should be the number one starter for like a full news cycle. So you don't have to worry about that. It'll get sorted out because we've seen this team do it a couple different ways. And the trick just seems to be, you know, win.
Get in and win. Yeah, maybe that's the t-shirt. Get in and win. Because it really, you know, the magic is the magic formula. You got to get hot. You got to be hot going into the playoffs. Well, the Phillies were hot going into the playoffs last year. It didn't matter. Well, you know, if you get the bye, you know, then you can rest and you'll be, it didn't matter. The Phillies have always have done better playing in the wild card round. What, you know, there's a lot, you know, at the end of the day, just play your best, try to play your best baseball going into October and then see if you can keep it going once you get in there. Let's talk about the game on Friday night. This was one of the craziest games I think we've seen in quite some time. This is one of the games of the year. And one of the craziest ninth innings you're ever going to see. The Phillies in that ninth inning had a 3-run home run from Bryson Stott ripped away from them when Wade Mecklar went over the fence to rob him for the second out of the inning. So the Angels just one out away from taking the opening game of the series. And then Sosa hits the 2-out ninth inning grand slam to put the Phillies ahead 5-3 in that inning. Just all the swings of emotion in the span of that 10 to 12 minutes where that all went down was just unbelievable. And then Jonathan Bolin comes in. You see, you know, where's Juan Duran? Everybody's asking themselves, where's Duran? Why isn't Duran coming in the game? Bolin comes in for the save and allows two base runners, but he ends up getting the save in place of Juan Duran, who we would later find out was dealing with some kind of sickness and stomach virus or whatever. But the Edmundo Sosa home run, again, if this was like a 1993, whatever it takes, dude type Phillies yearbook, that would certainly go, you know, it reminded me kind of like the Mariano Duncan grand slam on Mother's Day. That's what it reminded me of that quite a bit. It was the Phillies' first ninth inning with a grand slam in the ninth inning with two outs since Shane Victorino hit one in 2009. And it was the first pinch hit ninth inning grand slam since Ozzie Virgil in 1983. By the way, in an article I wrote for The Good Fight, there's actually a YouTube highlight of that Ozzie Virgil grand slam, the game in which that occurred. I have that in my Good Fight article. Regarding Sosa coming into the game, following that game on Friday, he had recorded multiple RBIs in five of his previous seven games. He had an OPS of 1392 with two outs and runners in scoring position, and that went up as the series went on. In high leverage situations, his OPS is 923, and he has the fourth most wins probability added on the Phillies, despite being just a part-time player. So the Sosa grand slam, the Phillies' fourth go-ahead home run with two outs in the ninth inning this year. It's tied for second most by any team in a season since 1901. Only the 2022 Giants had more. They had five. No other team in baseball this year has hit three. And the other NL East teams combined, this is a note from Jason Stark, have hit two combined go-ahead home runs with two outs in the ninth inning this year. So just wacky stuff going on with the Phillies. Wacky stuff, Justin. Just a wild game.
Yeah, I mean, eyeball test, I would have told you that Wade Mecklar was just all over this series. Felt like he was on the screen nonstop. He only went 3-for-10 against the Phillies with a couple of singles and a double. Only knocked in two runs. He had that, obviously, the catch in game one that was devastating. You could see Bryson Stott just like trying to understand space and time as he stared out to where he thought he'd hit a 3-run home run just seconds before. Mecklar also had a call reversed at first base and wound up getting called safe and coming around to score a run in a game. So like he was very present and constantly just talking about Wade Mecklar throughout this whole, and really I was gonna say maybe this is the catch of the year for all across baseball when he robbed Bryson Stott, but I don't know, was that Jacob Young who climbed the fence like Spider-Man the other day? Like, just absolute freak show of a catch. That was probably still the catch of the year, but still.
Yeah.
Mackler catch was devastating. You can kind of see that coming together. Stott, man, when he hits him like that, I mean, not tonight, notwithstanding where he hit maybe the longest Phillies home run of the season, but like, I feel like he hits a lot of very high home runs that just go over the fence when he hits them just barely. And that was one of those, and Mackler was able to, you know, do what he did with that. And yeah, it's devastating enough, but I don't know. Yeah. I felt like this team still wasn't totally out of it. Sounds corny to say, but it just was one of those moments where, like, I remember watching Carlos Ruiz batting with a chance to walk it off, I think against the Braves, and he hit one and just absolutely crushed it, but it went foul, and you were like, yeah, but this feels like, I think he's still gonna do it. Like, instead of that being the chance and, oh well, we blew it, it feels like this is still happening, and then he did on like the next pitch, and it just felt like that was like heroics were still on the table with this team, and entering an Edmundo Sosa hot zone is definitely gonna, you know, make that even more possible. So that grand slam, by the way, Tom McCarthy noted before, I think he hit it, that the Phillies had 29 two-out ninth-inning runs, which is second most in baseball this year, which is a hell of a statistic and definitely one you want to be able to say you have. That's definitely the kind of baseball the Phillies been playing lately, and you don't want to have to rely on late-inning heroics to you know, be a good baseball team, but that they are capable of it is definitely reassuring, again, as we get closer and closer to the playoffs.
Right. The playoff bullpens are a little bit better than the one the Angels have, but certainly I think their approach helped them in that ninth inning, too, because they loaded the bases on a hit by pitch and two walks that inning.
Some great at bats. You did see some of that coming together. Actually, to that point, I want to call out Justin Crawford's at bat in game two. He had a great long at bat in a key spot and wound up by what he hit, like a ground ball single, I think, that just found its way through and managed to get on base. A really, like, not memorable moment. Isn't going to make it on the highlight reels, but it's very important. And honestly, something he's been better and better at doing lately. Another great development to see happening.
He walked in that ninth inning with a great at bat, and that was a really tough situation. You know, he's got a chance to make an impact swinging the bat, and then he let the game come to him. He's really been doing that very well, an unsung hero kind of over the last few. He's not a hugely impactful offensive player, but he's doing enough really good things at the bottom of the lineup to kind of keep things moving and let the guys who are the stars do the damage in front of him. It's been very good seeing him. Really, I think, kind of do what he did in the minors last year, which is to, you know, get his hits, get on base, and he's really performing well with runners in scoring position as well here so far in his rookie season.
Feels like he's kind of bought you a couple more Kyle Schwarber at bats lately in
two
spots where he's kept something going, and then, you just go right back up to the top of the order, and hello, it's like you said, it's the heavy hitters.
That's a great point, and I think that's exactly right, and that's what you need him to do in the number nine spot. It's an important spot in the lineup for him there. So I said there were three things that I really wanted to see this Phillies team, how they responded coming into this Angels series. The second one was how the offense would perform against the left-hander Reed Detmers on Friday. They've got to figure out how to score off of decent left-handed starting pitching, because they're going to see that in the playoffs. So if I am looking forward a little bit, I am still a little perturbed at their inability to score any runs off of a halfway decent left-handed starter. It continues to be a struggle for them this year. And the reason I was really looking at the Reed Detmers game is because Reed Detmers is a good left-handed starter, but it was the first time they were going to face a really good left-handed starter since this new approach at the plate has manifested itself. And so I kind of wanted to see how that worked out, how those different things would take part.
What'd you learn?
I learned that there's only so much new plate discipline can do. They did work some counts, and it's just, it is what it is, but this team's just not going to be very good hitting left-handed pitching. You just hope your pitching does a pretty good job keeping you close until you get to some other guys late. And that's kind of the way they've done it. The other thing that I wanted to see was whether or not Andrew Painter's game against the Cardinals, I believe it was, right, when he went seven innings, was that just a one-off, or would it be something that he could take into his next game? How would he follow that up? And you mentioned it a few minutes ago at the start of that game on Friday night. It did not look good. He was all over the place. He gave up 3 runs in the first inning, 2 of them on wild pitches. And then he really locked in. Pitched 5 shutout innings, was a completely different pitcher when he hit the mound in the second inning and kept the game close and made it so that the Phillies could win that game late. And it was a really, over his last 5 innings, it was a dominant final 5 innings of shutout baseball. In all, he went 6 innings and only gave up 2 hits. He did walk 3 guys. Again, most of that damage was in the first inning, but struck out 6. And again, number 5 starter, number 5 starter gives you 6 innings, 2 hits, 3 runs. You're going to take that every single time. You're going to take that from your number 4 starter and maybe even your number 3 starter most of the time. If he can get this first inning stuff figured out, he's going to be in really good shape. Since returning to the majors on July 31st, his first inning ERA is 15. He's given up 10 earned runs in 6 innings. After the first inning, his ERA is 1.32. So let's figure something out here, Caleb Cotham. Let's get in the lab and let's see if we can figure out a way for Andrew Painter to have a smoother glide path into the first inning here. And I'm sure they're trying to think of different ways to do that.
What does this? What makes a pitcher struggle in this particular way?
I don't know. Maybe.
You know, like you're coming in there. I mean, unless they have like a book on you or they figured something out, I don't know. Is he a candidate for an opener? That doesn't seem.
No, because he's got it. No matter what inning he pitches, it's going to be his first inning. Like I've never understood that strategy. I've heard people say that, like, he struggles in the first inning. It's not just because it's an inning that starts with the number 1. It's his first inning. This person has trouble getting started. Doesn't matter if it's in the first inning or you bring him in the second or the third. That's always been so stupid to me when people say that.
Yeah, is it like, oh, he didn't have to face the top 3 in the batting order that first time, so he has a bonus. He has bonus pitches to throw at them. I don't know. Like you said, it feels more just like, hey man, maybe just figure out how to pitch in that one inning that you can't pitch in, and then all the rest are totally fine. Like, just figure that one out, and you can do that. I bet you can do that. I bet Caleb Cotham and this highly touted pitching lab that runs the Phillies department can figure that out, right? I feel confident about that these numbers are these are too good. Quite frankly, like I said, and like you just said, that was a first inning disaster that seemed like it was setting up a, you know, potentially rough series. Like, that's the first inning of the first game of this 3-game set. You're like, already, all right, well, this is trending downward. He retired 15 straight batters. That is the most hitters he has ever retired in a row. He did not allow base runners between like the first and sixth innings, I think, just because of that damage in the first. Yeah. And then the trouble he got in a little bit later. But to put it another way, like you said, 15 ERA, 20 earned runs allowed in the first inning. But after that, just looked like a great young pitcher. Like it looked like the bounce back continued where you'd see him run into trouble, but then he gives you a couple shutout innings in a row. And like you said, it all balances out for a fifth starter. I mean, he has that disaster 3-run inning in like the sixth and then comes out. It's almost kind of a bummer that you're like, he couldn't end on the he couldn't get that sixth inning. He couldn't blah, blah, blah. He has that in the first inning and they're like, yeah, I mean, he's out there to pitch these innings, so leave him out there. Gives him time to recover. He bounces back. Suddenly you're looking at the most consecutive batters he's retired in a row as a major leaguer. And, you know, we're good. Like you said, offense wasn't much help. They were putting together some really quick innings full of very quick outs against Reed Detmers in game 1. But I just want to point out that weird, when they hit that switch and started playing small ball for some reason in the fourth inning, it was working. Like they were actually pulling off the bunting and everything. And the only reason that all got shut down was Luis Arraez's comebacker that like bounced off Detmers and Zach Nato caught it out of the air. And that was such a, like a weird freak play that you're like, yeah, I mean, he makes a little different contact. It has a slightly different angle than we're talking about an offensive rally keyed by the Phillies playing small ball. So I just wanted to point out that even that was effective, even though ultimately nothing resulted from it.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's fair. And, I'm looking forward to opportunities for this team to try and get some confidence against left-handed starters. I'm sure after this series against the Diamondbacks, the Phillies will get the Braves. My guess is they'll face Chris Sale in that series. Chris Sale's been pretty damn good for the Braves. He's pretty unhittable against everybody, so I don't know that I'd hold it against the Phillies necessarily if they struggle against a guy like that, but I'd like to see them get some more innings, some more at-bats against some of these really good left-handers and see if they can't figure this out before October rolls around. Any other thoughts from this Angel series, Justin, I didn't get to? Lot going on.
Did you like Joan Duran getting a second inning?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think that's important for them as they get ready for the playoffs. I want to see him be able to do that, especially in October. Like, if they got to bring him in a tight spot in the eighth inning and then bring him out for the ninth, get him used to that now. I think that's really smart. They got to start doing that.
I also liked that he allowed the first batter he faced in both innings to reach base, just kind of like, you know, what's it called? Like a Western shooter gunfighter being like, all right, like, I'll wait an extra couple of seconds on the draw and you know, put myself at a disadvantage here and still get out of it. Also kind of felt like JT Realmuto was, getting interference calls in one way or another, all over this series.
Yeah.
Like a weirdly common occurrence over the weekend to see him called out, on something like that. But, like I said, just all in all, really promising series. It's, you know, on the one hand, you want to see them beat up on a team like the Angels that's really just there to get beat up on, at the moment. But you also want to see the stuff that hasn't been working for this team start working. And I think pretty much across the board, you saw starters succeeding who haven't been succeeding. You saw stability where there had been some stumbling. You saw great defense. You know, yeah, the base running defense. Base running mistakes got a little old. That was like very silly. But I know you're sitting here talking about wanting to get them more reps against lefties. I think the base running and the hitting against lefties are just such fundamental flaws for this team. They're not things that are going to be worked out by October. There's a chance they, like, you know, we credited this meeting at the end of July with them having this better approach at the plate that's been working so well. But you also know that it's a matter of time before that wears off to an extent. And
yes,
a couple of them are getting a little more hairy and itchy at the plate. And yeah, so these things happen in cycles. And I just think, yeah, the lefties are just, that's going to be a riddle this team is fighting to solve until it's no longer this team anymore. So but ultimately a great series against the Angels. No reason to think things are going to start falling apart anytime soon.
Right. And you know what? They swept a bad team, which is, you know, they really did need to sweep this team. The Angels are really bad. And the series could have gone either way. I mean, there were a couple games here where it very much could have gone either way. But the Phillies found a way, which is what good teams do against bad teams as well.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, you're going to be reading a lot about Phillies Braves as they get into their second patch of playing each other a ton of the season. And it's going to wind up being a really interesting parallel here because we all know they played them, seven times back in April, in late April.
You
saw a ton of the Braves and then both teams went their separate ways. And they have both, the Braves stayed really hot for a while. They dropped off. They had a miserable June, I'm pretty sure. They didn't bounce back too well in July either. They were really face planting for a bit there. And the Phillies also, you know, they won a ton in a row, got close to the NL East lead, and then dropped off again. Now both teams, the Braves are starting to get hot, the Phillies are staying hot, and guess who's on the schedule? So
yeah,
seven games against Atlanta could be really interesting. And like you said, yeah, you're definitely gonna run into Chris Sale. So
yeah
there too.
Yeah, you don't want to look past this Diamondback series because it is a big series for both teams in terms of the wild card. But I'm sure the Phillies are this four-game series against Atlanta and in Philadelphia is going to have some serious juice this coming weekend. That's going to be a whole lot of fun. One other thing I did want to talk about, and this came out. First, in a kind of a little bit of a news bulletin from the Phillies earlier in the week, that they're making a bunch of changes to their player development setup. In short, what's happening here is that the former farm system director, Luke Merton, was being promoted to assistant GM. The club was now looking outside the organization for a new farm director. Now, you read it like that and you think, oh, the farm director has done such a good job, they're giving him a promotion. And, you know, now we need to find a new one. That's obviously not what we've seen and what's been going on. When you see where the Phillies farm system ranks, how they've had difficulty producing star quality players. The players they've drafted have kind of hit some ceilings. Aiden Miller, of course, losing an entire year of development with a mysterious back injury is just, I don't know if I'd call it catastrophic, but it's been absolutely awful for the farm system. And you don't really see a whole lot else there where you look, major league star, you know, just don't see that right now. So generally speaking,
I don't really think about it being possible, honestly. Like, it's not a factor in my brain that a superstar is going to come out of this farm system. It's just not something I think about.
Francisco Renteria, maybe in a couple of years. That's the only guy that has that kind of potential. But Matt Gelb had a good write-up for The Athletic about this, and I wanted to just kind of mention some key points from the article and get your thoughts on this. Dave Dombrowski said that removing oversight of the entire farm system from Luke Merton's responsibilities while promoting him to assistant general manager was not an admission that things haven't progressed as the franchise would like. But the Phillies, without a robust farm system, felt that something needed to change. I mean... this
nothing is wrong.
Nothing's
We're
wrong.
Just doing this because we want to, but everything is totally fine. It's not an admission that anything.
No,
wrong.
Not an admission. We're not admitting anything's wrong.
More of an acknowledgement that something could be wrong theoretically, but is it versus not? Who's to say? Thank you for coming to the press conference. I don't know. That's silly. That's silly. Yeah. Just like we're making changes. We feel like this is going to be a productive thing. If we're insinuating one man overseeing the entire farm system and moving to a more, you know, maybe specific approach. Yeah, sure. But I mean, ask anybody about the Phillies farm system and any changes they're in. They're probably A, not going to recognize a lot of the names you're talking about, which is fine. And B, they're going to say, all right, well, you know, something different could be better, and we're all looking for better. So I'm all ears when the Phillies are like, we're doing this, and this is why. But they typically don't get to the "and this is why" part. They just stick with the everything's totally fine, and we love everyone.
Yeah,
we're just shifting some guys around.
We are. This is a massive change, and they're trying to sell it as like, you know, we just, you know, moving some guys around. Every team does this every couple of years. What is there, you know, though?
People view big change as a great thing. People would be excited. You can say like, okay, we're making some changes to our farm system management and everything.
We recognize like, this isn't working. Yeah. Come on. So Matt Gelb also noted that Merton had been asked to do three jobs. Dombrowski said he was the director of player development, the director of hitting, and something akin to an assistant director of amateur scouting. Now, I'm no baseball executive. That sounds like a lot to ask one guy to do, especially if you want to improve your farm system. That's crazy, right?
Nothing against this guy's skills, because I know absolutely nothing about Luke Merton other than the job positions he's held for the Phillies, but like, that's like, you're reaching unproductive levels of job having at that point. There's simply no way one person is able to give 100% focus to any of those jobs. And those are three. Those seem like three important jobs. Like,
I mean,
kind of looking at this like, okay, I'm starting to see why maybe our farm system ranking is plummeting, because there's one exhausted man who's just trying to do every job.
Well, one of the things Matt noted in the article is for the last 2 years with Merton atop the farm system, inconsistent leadership created uneven communication, according to multiple team sources who spoke on condition of anonymity to candidly discuss organizational matters. I mean, how is this still happening?
Why are we still doing it? This was all supposed to go out with the Kapler trash. What are we talking about? Uneven communication, whoopsie. Oh, not getting the same. Get on the same level, man. Just let's start there. Yeah, get everybody on the same email thread. Let's start with that. And then start moving forward on how to improve the farm system as a whole. We can't still be talking about how are we still talking about how, oh yeah, there's just some unevenness here. This stuff needs to be worked out, man. Like this was years ago. It feels like
it should. I mean, yes, this is the whole thing Dave Dombrowski was supposed to fix when he came in here. And I know they had a very, I can't remember his name now, but they had a very important guy in the front office who went to the Nationals and became kind of like their head guy.
Analude Corumbi.
Thank you. Columbia. Yeah. And apparently they just said, well, we'll just promote everybody from within, which is kind of what the Phillies do. And nobody was getting any outside ideas. Nobody was getting anything coming in from, and they have this, The Phillies have this pitching factory down in Clearwater, which has taken them. Andrew Painter is quoted in the story saying, like, it took us a couple years to figure out how to use it, but now we're really actually. It's one of the reasons he's been able to kind of figure some things out, but they don't have anything like that on the hitting side. And it sounds like that's what they need to try and work on. It says after Andrew Painter struggled to a 7.06 ERA in his first 14 outings this season, a group of player development officials and major league pitching coaches built a plan to get him back on track. What they focused on, all right, blah, 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 blah. Painter said the suggestions the Phillies provided, which stemmed from their pitching lab, were helpful, but this might not have been possible just a couple years ago as the Phillies got the pitching lab off the ground. But they don't, doesn't sound like they don't have anything like this for the offense. He also mentions that the farm director job, one of the most time-consuming roles in the sport, requires significant attention. Within the organization, some wondered if the current farmhands were afforded that under Merton's leadership. Dombrowski, who said he would not respond to critiques raised by anonymous sources, did not dispute that Merton's attention was stretched, and that robust debates about playing time and positional plans are common in every farm system, but team sources said players would encounter inconsistent messaging between different instructors and levels.
Yeah, guys, so just, here's a clipboard. Everybody write your email address down legibly on the clipboard, and we're just going to start there and just get everybody on the same level.
You're wondering why this farm system is ranked in the bottom third of Major League Baseball. They still can't talk to each other. They still can't provide consistent information to their players. I
like to think Dave Dombrowski's scrolling through his Gmail and finds like an email right before whatever draft they took Aiden Miller, and it just says like "bad back, do not draft" in all capital letters. And he's like,
"Oh, dang it!
If only,
yeah."
I should have checked the spam folder.
Everything goes to junk. No, I mean, everything important goes to their promotions tab. You know, you get what to look in the promotions tab sometimes. You forget to do that. Other thing. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's just, just repeating the same point. But like anybody within the Phillies organization, you know, if they were to hear us giving any kind of critiques or thoughts, would be like, well, you don't know what's going on the inside, or like who's looking at what, or who should have which job. Like, blah, blah. And you say, fair enough. You
all
know,
true.
Totally fair enough. But boy, it just seems like one guy having all those jobs is just a recipe for disaster. Like for exactly the situation that resulted from doing that. I don't understand the reluctance in having more than one person like in waiting to develop like people for each individual job that a different person should have. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just seems a fundamental flaw.
And it's not like they're cheap with this stuff. They hire lots of players. They have one of the largest analytics departments in Major League Baseball.
They have five assistant GMs. Yeah. Five now.
What are they assisting on? Help this guy.
Well,
let him do his job.
Hitting, one is research and information. He's replacing the guy who went to the Nationals that you were just mentioning.
Right.
That position had not been refilled since he left. Strategic communications or something. Ned Rice is one of them, and Jorge Valencia is another one of them, but they just are called assistant general managers. They don't have specifications, but there's five of them now. So you got to hope that's enough, or at least, you know, we're filling in these roles with other individual people. And I know that like some responsibilities are with all these moves that we're talking about going to other people. Like you said, it's just, you know, I guess it's about balance. It's about shifting, you know, the weight each guy is carrying. It just comes down to, man, I guess I didn't realize that not everybody had the job they were supposed to have.
Right.
Yet. Like we were still that far behind.
I thought you had guys who were doing, you know, not more than five jobs at a time. And clearly the Phillies understand something's wrong. They're not producing players at the rate that they should be. They don't have the kind of prospects that a team like them that's putting as much money into the minor league system should have. And so here we are, and they're making changes, and they're trying to tell us, you know, well, not a big deal. You know, we're going to shake. We're going to do some different things. It's a major deal. This is a big, big deal. This is a major admission that the farm system. No, I mean, it is. It is.
yeah, they're making the changes that you would want to see them make in a situation like this. But yeah, I mean, here we are learning about this at the time of the changes being made. So we sit here and say, like, what's wrong with this farm system? And then you find out stuff like this is happening.
Lots.
And this is what people are all, this is what fans are complaining about, even when they don't realize it. It's like a lot of this, the issues that have plagued the Phillies on a deeper level, it comes from situations like this. But again, the good news is they're addressing it, and some serious changes have been made. This is ultimately good for this team. As much as Dave Dombrowski talked about getting the minor league players and getting younger players involved coming into this season, you know, whether that had always been the plan or that he wanted that to be the plan, who knows? But coming into the season, they really emphasized how much of a role that those three top prospects were going to play coming into the season. Obviously, Miller didn't really pan out. You're starting to see more value from guys like Crawford and Painter for sure. But you got to be able to produce more than like two out of three top prospects to contend at the level that the Phillies want this franchise to be at by the time Dombrowski is like ready to depart. That was part of this. Was a general elevation of the Phillies like across the board. And so if this is them being like, all right, we feel like we've corrected enough at the major league level that we're going to address these inconsistencies and in how our player development system works. All right, fine. They're like, that's fine. Again, I thought we were a little further along than this, but all right, good. If that's all what this is headed towards, to just have this team be stronger and have a better pipeline, then great. I'm all for it, because that's the state I need this team to be in, you know, in the decades ahead, because this core is on its way out.
Yeah. Just let us vent a little bit about how frustrating it has been to watch the way the farm system has materialized, and reading all about this has been it's mockable. I'm sorry, Dave Dombrowski, it's mockable, and we're going to mock it a little bit. But we mock it as the Phillies on the major league level are playing some fantastic baseball right now. It's 2-1 in the bottom of the fifth as the Phillies are out in Arizona. Phillies leading 2-1 against the Diamondbacks. Nola is pitching pretty well, knock on wood. Of course, I say that, and he'll probably give up a home run any second now. So we should probably sign off before that happens, because I don't want to have to talk about it while we're still on the air. So, Justin, final thoughts as the Phillies are in Arizona taking on the Diamondbacks ahead of a big weekend series between the Phils and the Braves.
No, I just kind of thought we were going to be talking about a collision between Bryce Harper and Justin Crawford there at the outfield. So I'm glad we don't have to talk about that. I mean, it definitely happened, but they both look like they're okay. So that's fine. But these are the risks of watching late night sicko baseball, John. Mm. And this is the last chance we're going to get to do that this year, as the Phillies are done playing on the West Coast after this. So, you know, it's an enjoyable experience until I'm in the middle of it. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, this is generally this can be rough. But hey, that's why late night West Coast sicko baseball is not for the faint of heart. So
it
I
is
hope
not.
We can all enjoy these last few games against the Diamondbacks.
That's right. I don't think I realized that these are the last West Coast games. So, yeah, enjoy them for you night owls out there. For those of you who work a weird shift or whatever and you're up at night, enjoy. Enjoy some Phils baseball here as they finish up this West Coast road trip. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I want to encourage everybody to subscribe to the WHYY YouTube channel. That's where you can find the video portion of this podcast, where every roundtable edition of the podcast is found there. So if you do just listen to the audio version, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast. Please tell your friends and your family members about the show and leave the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and a review. We'd love to hear what you have to say. You can also email us at hittinseason@billypenn.com. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.